We're in Acts chapter 21. Slowly making our way through the book of Acts. It's our second year. The time goes by when you're having fun. And I've had fun in this study. So we're in Acts chapter 21. If I were to ask you up to in Acts chapter 21, at least up to verse 20. So in the first 19, 20 verses in Acts chapter 21, what stands out most in your mind? What stands out most in your mind as you reflect back on what we've studied so far in Acts, the 21st chapter? Not one right answer, but could be a number of things.
Paul's dedication is really brought out and emphasized.
Okay. Paul busy about and very serious about the work, the task at hand. And it reminds us how serious the Lord's work is. No gospel preaching, no conversion. And so we see Paul being dedicated in the work that he's busy about doing. What else?
In the face of danger, too.
Yeah. That's right. Opposition, danger, persecution. The dedication about the fact they did not want him to go to Jerusalem. And Paul said, listen, I don't know what's going to happen when I get there. I'm ready to not only be bound, but to die for the cause of Christ. Who prophesied that the man that owns this girdle will be bound and given to the Gentiles? Agabus did. Not the first time that we read about Agabus, because we first read about Agabus where at? We also read about Agabus. What other chapter? We've already stuck.
11.
Yeah, chapter 11. Because he prophesied that there was what going to take place? A great famine, right? Great dearth, the King James Version says. And the brethren, which by the way, gives us another little time stamp. And you get little hints at a time stamp if you want dates, approximate dates, and so forth. Because you read about Herod, like in Acts chapter 12, that gives you a little time stamp. You read about the famine that was going to come to pass in Acts chapter 11, and the Bible says, which came to pass in the days of Claudius Caesar, that gives you a little time stamp. When the Jews were expelled from Rome, and we read about Aquila and Priscilla, that gives you a little time stamp. So you can look up some historical facts about when these men were in office, and that gives you a little time stamp in the book of Acts. What stands out in my mind as well in Acts chapter 21, without taking too much of our time, is because we have a reference to Philip the evangelist. We spent some time on that last week, which was one of the seven, and that automatically takes our mind back to where?
Chapter 6,
because he was one of the men that was listed there. And so we get down to verse 20. When they heard it, they glorified the Lord, and said unto him, thou seest, brother, how many thousands of Jews there are which believe, and they are all zealous of the law. I read about someone else who said, I was also zealous of the law. Who said that? Paul did in the book of Galatians. And so they're telling him, look, there's a multitude of Jews that believe they're zealous of the law. Well, it's not the first time that we read about Jews that were trying to persuade the brethren to keep the law of Moses, because an entire chapter in the book of Acts was dedicated to that, which was chapter... Where was it that some of the brethren were troubling some Jews were troubling the hearts of the brethren, saying, except you be circumcised after the manner of Moses, you can't be saved. And then they sent to Jerusalem for the elders and the apostles to consider it. Acts 15, good job, Blaine. Which is sometimes referred to as the Jerusalem Conference. The book of Acts and Acts 15, this chapter, the book of Hebrews, the book of Galatians, are good places, and the book of Romans in some sections of, are good places to go to if you're dealing with the fact that we're not under the Old Testament law of Moses. And circumcision in the flesh, it doesn't get anyone closer to God or any further away from God, but it's a circumcision of the heart. Paul talked about in the book of Romans. And there are informed of thee that thou teachest all the Jews which are among the Gentiles to forsake I like that word forsake because in the original, it's the word which we get our English word apostatize. When we talk about an apostasy of falling away, that's this word, to forsake Moses. In other words, to forsake or to leave, to go away from the law of Moses, saying they ought not to circumcise their children, neither to walk after the customs. Three things that they are saying Paul was teaching. Forsake Moses, don't be circumcised, and don't walk after the customs. Did Paul teach? We'll get more into an action upon just a moment. But in gospel preaching, had Paul been preaching that one does not have to keep the law of Moses? Absolutely. When we preach the gospel today, do we preach that we're not under the Old Testament law of Moses? Well, sure. I think about Matthew 5, verse 17, when the Lord said, "Think not that I come to destroy the law of the prophets. I'm not come to destroy, but to fulfill those things." Now, Jesus, we understand, he was born a Jew, he lived a Jew, he died a Jew. But the point he's saying is, I fulfilled all things at the Old Testament. That's what the statement he makes in Luke 24. And whatsoever things were written in the law, the prophets, and the Psalms concerning me, I fulfilled those things. What is it, therefore? The multitude must needs come together, for they will hear that thou art come. Do therefore this that we say to thee. We have four men which have a veil on them. And I don't know what that veil was. Do you? Why don't we know? It doesn't say in that verse. They had a veil. Take them and purify thyself with them, and be at charges with them, that they may shave their heads, and all may know that those things whereof they were informed concerning thee are nothing. Now, if we're not going to understand what's getting ready to come if we don't understand, qualify that verse. When he says in this verse that they may know that the things whereof they were informed concerning thee, well, here's what comes to my mind. Those things. I want to know what those things that they were informed concerning thee. What things is that in reference to?
Forsaking Moses.
Yeah, forsake Moses.
Walking not according to the customs.
Yeah, don't keep the customs.
And circumcision.
All right, so here's my question before you even go on. Must a Christian forsake the law of Moses?
Yes
to that one. Must a Christian forsake the customs, which could be traditions handed down by men?
Yes.
Now, remember, not all tradition is bad. There are inspired traditions and then traditions of men. We understand that. What about circumcision?
It was not a law that it had to be done, but Paul circumcised some people.
Yeah.
It's something that's not binding.
Yeah, so as something that is binding, do we bind? We don't bind that today, right? So do we forsake a binding of that?
Yes.
Doesn't matter. That's the point that Paul makes in Romans and other places. Well, those things that were informed of Paul to others that they knew about, and he's talking about, they are informed of thee. He's talking about those Jews that believe, that are very zealous of the law. And he's saying, listen, this is what we suggest you do. Here's what you need to do. We've got some men that have a veil on them. Take them, purify thyself with them, and be at charges with them, so that folks will know that what they've been informed of thee, that that is, here's a point that I think is a very important point. He says so that they will know that it's nothing. As we go through here, I want you to think, what would you have done? What would you have done? You've been preaching that men are to forsake Moses, not keep the tradition or the customs, that circumcision is not binding. What would you have done? As touching, now, and as well in verse 24, but that thou thyself also walkest orderly and keepest the law. So in other words, take these men, you've been out here preaching, forsake Moses and so forth, and the Jews who are very zealous of the law, well, obviously they don't like that. And so here's some men that have a vow. You with them, you take them, and you purify yourself, and you show that those things are nothing, and that you walk orderly, and that you yourself also keep the law. What would you have done? Just think about that. As touching the Gentiles which believe, we have written and concluded that they observe no such thing. Well, where was that, that they had written that they observed no such thing? Blaine got it right earlier. Acts chapter 15. Save only that they keep themselves from things offered to idols, and from blood, and from strangled, and from fornication. Well, obviously, yeah, they did right. It was written in Acts chapter 15 that you abstain from things offered to idols and from blood and from fornication. And they say, if you do these things, you do well. Then Paul took them in, and the next day purifying himself with them. When it says purify thyself, and it says here that Paul purified himself, what is that in reference to? What would they have been following in order to purify themselves? The Old Testament law of Moses. We don't have a command in the New Testament, this side of the cross, to do something by which an individual would be physically purified. We do spiritually. Seeing you have obeyed the gospel, purifying your hearts rather by faith. Their hearts were purified by faith, and then Peter writes about that in 1 Peter chapter 1. And our minds, our conscience is cleansed through obeying the gospel. 1 Peter chapter 3 talks about that. Signifying the accomplishment of the days of purification. There's your clue back to Numbers chapter 6 verse 13. Until an offering should be offered for every one of them. And when the 7 days were almost ended, the Jews, which were of Asia, when they saw him in the temple, stirred up all the people and laid hands on him. So did Paul do what was suggested Paul do? Well, he did. Now here's where we kind of left off last week in asking this question. I asked you the question, did Paul do wrong by doing what was suggested to him to show that he was purifying himself, that the things that he was preaching was nothing, and that he walked orderly keeping the Old Testament law of Moses? I just asked you to think about that. But I am curious to know as to what your thoughts were on that. How would you answer that? If someone said, now why did Paul do this? Because you're going to have folks who say, for example, all these times that we've looked at Paul going into the synagogue, they say, well, look here, here's an example of Paul keeping the Sabbath. Well, no, it's not. But Paul went where a religiously minded group of people were gathered together to preach the gospel. And I'm not saying that equates to what's going on here. But I'm saying that when the argument is raised that, well, look what Paul did. What do we say to that? Whether you think that it was right or wrong, I just want to hear your thought process on that.
Well, I thought only when I read that part, Paul became different things for different people in order that he could still teach them without just offending them right off, you know. And he did different things depending on where he was at and who he was with.
Okay.
Paul didn't have a vow, did he?
Paul was not of the number of the men that he took with him who did have the vow. But the statement was made. Yeah, take and purify thyself with him and be at charges with him. They have vow, you be at charges with them. Any other thoughts on that? And it's okay if you say, you know what, I don't know if he did right or wrong on that.
I don't know if he did right or wrong, but I think he did it so that he would have the influence, the influence so that they would listen to what he had to say.
Okay.
But,
did he break the law in doing it?
Would it have been contrary to anything this side the cross to have a veil. Or not necessarily that he had a veil, but was there anything wrong with having a veil? Is one closer to God for having one or farther away?
No.
Okay.
Was the purification the same for Paul as it was for those that had the veil?
The purification he had would have been under the Old Testament law, most because he clarifies. And
what was he being purified from?
Well,
from the things he was accused of.
Yeah. Which would have been 7 days. Go ahead.
I think too, you know, to Lowell's point, I think it's 1 Corinthians 9:19, how he came all things to all men. We also know from their actions that where was one of the first places they went when they went into the cities? The synagogues.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were starting there first. That's where the people of God, their audience is going to be congregated. And kind of feeds to that point that Paul and Bernice are talking about, becoming all things to all men, to get that audience. And something that helps me feel better about it is if you go on ahead of here and see what he uses this opportunity and the point that he makes, it kind of, you know, it lends some more credibility to Paul and what his intent was.
Yeah.
Because when he gets the audience and he goes before him, he gets to tell of his conversion and of his work and what he's been doing. So,
yeah, but he was also a Jew himself.
Yeah. He didn't get up and play down, at least from what I remember right off my head, play down the gospel and play up the old law or anything like that when he got his audience and his opportunity to speak when he got in with.
Okay.
Donald.
Yes.
Who did he circumcise? Who did Paul circumcise? Who did he circumcise? Is it Timothy or Titus?
No, it was Timothy.
Okay, same difference. He didn't have to. What point was he doing for that, you know? And
another thing, like I was just referring to, these accusations. You know, preparing himself to be into the synagogues because he's already been accused of bringing a Gentile or bringing someone unworthy, you know, into the synagogues and these things.
And that's Acts 16. I want to double check myself on that. Acts 16.
Okay. Was he wrong doing that?
No. And the reason he did that is because of what the Jews knew, because they knew that his father was a Greek and that his mother was a Jew.
So, does what he needs to do at the time.
Okay.
And he knows he's not violating his conscience. But sometimes you don't violate others' conscience until they are stronger.
Okay. Mark, did I cut you off?
No, it's no.
Okay. Any other thoughts on that? I just want you to think about that. Here's a problem I have for what it's worth. The problem that I see with it, and we're just learning from one another. I get 1 Corinthians chapter 9, to the Jew I became a Jew, to those without law I became, and then he says I became all things to all men that I might by all means save some. So I understand that. The problem that I see with what he did, and I'm not saying right or wrong. Now, if the question was asked me, would you have done that? My answer would be no. I would not have done that. Because in doing that, he is doing that to show others what? That what you've been preaching is not right. That when you've been preaching to others that they ought to forsake the law of Moses, you do this so that you're proving to them that what you've been preaching is nothing. I would not have put myself in a position to undermine for a second the gospel preaching that I'd been doing. You see, that's my take on that, for what it's worth. If you were asked today, I'll just make some application of it. If you were asked today by a religious group, listen, we want to hear what you've got to say. Folks have been hearing about the preaching you've been doing. But now this is kind of a tradition we do when we get together this kind of a church ordinance that we do, and we'd sure like for you to come here, but in order to show those people that are going to come and listen to you that what you've been preaching is nothing, then would you submit to this church ordinance we do? Would you have done it? I wouldn't have either. Now, I'm not, I'm just saying that's my issue with that.
When you look, God did not condemn Paul for what he done, so evidently what he done was not wrong.
Okay.
And so he was a clear conscience in doing that. And as you mentioned, you wouldn't do it, but God allowed it, and he approved of it. My mother wasn't approved of you.
So, some things may not be right nor wrong, maybe a judgment call, but you got to decide what you would do and be at peace with yourself on those things. Paul did have opportunity to preach the gospel to them, and he did preach the gospel as we're getting ready to cover. Any other thoughts on that? My point that I want to make to you is I would not suggest you to do anything that would undermine what you've preached or to undermine your work. And I'm not saying that Paul undermined it, but clearly the statement is made, you do this so that others will know that what you've been preaching is not right or that it's nothing. But nonetheless, any other thoughts?
See, Donnie, I don't take that as him saying that what you've been preaching is nothing.
Okay.
I take it that what he's saying is those things are nothing, that you don't do those things. That's nothing for you to be doing. That's how I took that.
Okay. Good. Good job. A lot of thought that can go into that. And so he goes ahead and he does what it was suggested to him to do. In verse 27, and here's what stood out in my mind as well. Okay, he listened to what these men were saying to do because of the zealous Jews. And Paul did it, and guess what? You think that appeased everybody? No, there were still people that wasn't happy with what he did. And so it's not that as though what he did, well, that just silenced everybody. Now they're on board with what Paul's going to preach. Not so, because look what was the result of it, one of the results. And when the 7 days were almost ended, that would have been the days of the purification, the Jews which were of Asia, when they saw him in the temple, stirred up all the people and laid hands on him, crying out, "Men of Israel, help. This is the man that teacheth all men everywhere against the people and the law in this place." Now, notice again what they're accusing. Teacheth all men everywhere against the people. What does that mean, against the people? How could Paul's gospel preaching have been against the people?
Against
what the people stood for. It wasn't that he was being a racist or nationalistic in one way or another. It just simply against what the people had been doing. And the law and this place. What place? Temple. And further brought Greeks also into the temple and had polluted this holy place. What was it true? Did he bring Greeks into the temple? Paul's going to talk about that. Don't be too quick to answer. But Paul's going to address that. For they had seen before with him the city Trophimus, an Ephesian, whom they supposed that Paul had brought into the temple. You better be careful about suppositions, about just assumptions and supposing various different things. In fact, the wise man penned, "He that answereth a matter before he heareth it, it's what? It is folly unto him." And so it's folly for a man to answer a matter before he hears the matter. And all the city was moved, and the people ran together, and they took Paul, drew him out of the temple, and forthwith the doors were shut. And as they went about to kill him, Mark pointed out the fact that Paul was dedicated and the opposition, the persecution that he had, they went about to do what to Paul? To kill him. Now the first time, tidings came to the chief captain of the band that all Jerusalem was in an uproar. Someone was accused before, "These are the men that turneth this city upside down." Remember that? I think about the little phrase again. in verse 28, this is the man. Now you could preach up a storm on that. This is the man. Just point out some things about Paul. What could you preach about? This is the man. This is the man that... This is the man that...
Persecuted Christians.
Initially. This is the man that arose and was baptized, having his sins washed away. This is the man that submitted to the Holy Spirit's instruction to go forth and proclaim the gospel. This is the man that preached on the Lord's Day in Acts 20, verse 7. You could just go on and on and talk about this is the man who immediately took soldiers and centurions and ran down unto them. And when they saw the chief captain and the soldiers, they left beating of Paul. Paul writes about in a number of places about the things that he suffered. 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and 2 Corinthians chapter 11. He catalogs, he lists the things that befell him. And he writes about that in 1 Timothy chapter 6. When he talks about Alexander the coppersmith did me much evil and so forth. Any other thoughts about that? Make some notes concerning the various things that befell Paul. That's 2 Timothy chapter 4, not 1 Timothy chapter 6. Then the chief captain came near and took him and commanded him to be bound with two chains and demanded who he was and what he had done. And when you read about these things concerning what befell Paul, and now about him being bound, and he's going to be bound, he's going to give a defense of himself, answer for himself, he's going to recount his conversion. I automatically think about the fact that this is in direct fulfillment of what Agabus prophesied. So you might want to go back to the words that Agabus gave in Acts chapter 21 and make some notes in the margin of your Bible to these events. Until he would know what had been done, some cried one thing, some another among the multitude, and when he could not know the certainty for the tumult, he commanded him to be carried into the castle. And when he came upon the stairs, so it was that he was borne to the soldiers for the violence of the people. For the multitude of the people followed after, crying, "Away with him, away with him." When he was borne to the soldiers because of the tumult of the people, what could that include? Why was he being borne to the soldiers? Because of the people. Born, in other words, means what? He was being carried. Why would he have to be carried? He'd been beaten. And there was a throng of men that wanted to still have him killed. They were following after, saying, "Away with him." And as Paul was to be led into the castle, he said unto the chief captain, "May I speak unto thee, who said, 'Can you speak Greek? Are you not that Egyptian which before these days made an uproar and laidest out into the wilderness 4,000 men that were murderers?'" Why would he ask Paul that question? Did Paul do that? He said, "Are you the man that did this?" Rose said no. Anybody else? Everybody agree with Rose?
He did this before he obeyed the gospel.
"Art thou that Egyptian?" Again, you've got to be careful as to what? Be careful as to what you hear. Sometimes folks might be informed of you, and what they're informed of you may not be the truth. You agree with that? I mean, Paul's already been told, listen, there's people that are informed of thee. Well, what they are informed of thee may not necessarily be the truth. And so you got to be careful about that. But Paul said, "I'm a man which am a Jew of Tarsus." In other words, I'm not an Egyptian. Paul's giving an answer to himself. Was Paul an Egyptian? Yes or no? No, he's going to talk for himself. "I'm a man which am a Jew of Tarsus, a city in Cilicia." That'd be our present day Turkey, by the way. "A citizen of no mean city, and I beseech thee, suffer me to speak unto the people." And when he had given him license, Paul stood on the stairs and beckoned with the hand unto the people. And here's what's amazing to me. Paul is now beckoning unto the people, the same people that just got done beating him. Well, I guess he's getting ready to give them an earful. Let me tell you what I think of you after you've treated me this way. And what a lesson for us. When he had given him license, beckoned his hand with the people, and when there was made a great silence, you'll probably hear a pin drop. We're going to listen to hear what this man's got to say. He spake unto them the Hebrew tongue, saying, and our time's gone. What a good stopping place. I appreciate your thoughts. And you give in thinking to what we've been talking about. And that's one way that you learn in a Bible class is you learn and you share with others what you know. And then I tell you, you just keep adding and adding to what you know. And it just makes you a stronger Bible student as we seek to learn more and more about the Bible. Appreciate your good attention.